On today's show, Donovan Mitchell was traded to the Cavs. Did the Heat miss their chance to land another superstar? And do they need to make a move now more than ever in order to stay in the mix in the East? All of that and much more coming up next on today's episode of Locked On Heat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat. However you may be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or your favorite podcast app, thank you so much for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil talking a few days after the big blockbuster deal that sent Donovan Mitchell from the Utah Jazz to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Utah getting three unprotected picks, two pick swaps, Colin Sexton, Larry Markkanen, and Oshae Agbaji in the deal. A blockbuster, one that not a lot of people saw coming. David, what was your instant reaction when you saw the news? And now that a few days have passed, what's your kind of response? What's your feel about the trade right now?
Well, first of all, apologies to our listeners for not recording sooner, but both you and I enjoying well-deserved vacations. And of course, immediately upon departure for our vacations, that's when the trade goes down. And of course, it's too late by that point to have a reaction to it. So when I first heard the news, I was disappointed and surprised. That's how I'd sum it up. Disappointed because I really thought, as we discussed in the most recent episode of Locked On Heat, that with the Knicks choosing to extend RJ Barrett's contract, that it would open the door up for other potential teams to swoop in there and make an offer, most notably Miami. And we debated whether or not Miami had enough to pry Donovan Mitchell out of Utah, but it seemed like they were at least in very good position to do so. And obviously, that didn't play out the way it was supposed to, at least from Miami's perspective and from a lot of Miami fans' perspective. So I was disappointed in that aspect because I thought somehow it was just going to work out that Mitchell would land in Miami. Having said all that, I was also surprised because I don't think that there was any mention of Cleveland as a potential suitor. Like in all the reports, all the rumors, all the possibilities, I don't think anybody had suggested that maybe Cleveland would get in on that action and try to figure out a way of getting Mitchell. And it kind of came at the 11th hour. And then to kind of hear what the proposed package was or what the finalized trade package was, I guess that kind of added to the level of disappointment from Miami, because I think there's a debate to be had as about whether or not it's of equal value to whatever Miami could offer in a trade for Mitchell.
As soon as the Knicks went ahead and extended RJ Barrett, you and I got on here, did a show about how this opened the door potentially for the Heat to match whatever the new best offer from the Knicks would be. And I think when we had that conversation, I can understand why you might have thought that, hey, if Donovan Mitchell is going to get traded, maybe the Heat are a realistic contender here. I did see Cleveland somewhere mentioned, but like there were a lot of teams being mentioned in terms of Donovan Mitchell. I think there were a lot of teams across the NBA calling. And I just wonder, now that we saw this final offer, a couple things. Number one, where did it go wrong for the Knicks, who seemed to really want Donovan Mitchell? And how did those talks break down? And number two, what was it that the Heat did either offer or were willing to offer for Donovan Mitchell? Because according to the Salt Lake Tribune, according to the Miami Herald, and a lot of other reporting around it, the Heat at least had conversations with Utah about Donovan Mitchell. And you look at what the ultimate trade package was: three unprotected picks, two pick swaps, a nice young player in Colin Sexton, a nice young player in Lauri Markkanen, and their first round pick that they just took. And I find it hard to believe that the Heat could not have matched that. Right. At the very least, if they would have lifted the protections on that OKC pick, which would have cost something, maybe a second round pick or two or something. But if they lift the protections on that pick, they would have been able to trade three unprotected first round picks. Exactly what Utah got. The pick swaps, not a problem. They could have matched the pick swaps. Colin Sexton, Lauri Markkanen, and your first round pick that you just took a couple months ago, Miami could have put in Tyler Hero, right? Yeah. They haven't extended him yet. He's able to be traded. There's other young players on this roster, whether it's Omer Yurtseven, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, whoever. And they just took a first round pick in Nikola Jovic, and they could have included him in the deal as well. I don't know if the Heat got as far as what it was that Cleveland offered for Donovan Mitchell. I don't know if it would have been worth it for Miami to make that deal either. I get that's not what I'm trying to point out here. What I'm saying is I'm just curious as to whether or not Miami ever went to the level that Cleveland went to. And if they did, why didn't Utah want that package? And if they did not, why not? Right? Because this is a team that has been clearly in the superstar chase. Donovan Mitchell does, I don't know, theoretically check some of those boxes. We probably won't ever know what happened. I think very few people in that Heat organization do know exactly what it is that happened, how far they were willing to go, how what exactly it is that they were willing to offer. But this, they could have matched this, I think. What do you think?
I think so. You know, if you look at the value of, you know, Markkanen, it's not particularly high. He's a first-round pick, obviously, but he's been traded for a couple teams already. He's, you know, he has potential. He's got the right size. I'm sure.
Fine player.
A fine player. A decent player. And I think you would have questioned. A lot of Bulls fans certainly would have questioned that. You know, he was a disappointment there. Ironically, isn't he the pick that Chicago landed in exchange for Jimmy Butler when they traded him to Minnesota, too? I think that was a part of the deal there. But anyway, I just think also the rookie comparison, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with that. The pick swaps, it's, you know, you asked a question whether or not it would have been a good deal for Miami. That seems like it might have been a little excessive. All those picks, all that collateral, and top of that then to trade away actual players. And in Miami's case, it would have involved probably a Hero and not a Duncan Robinson, as a lot of people have suggested. It would have been somebody more like, you know, a first year type player or a second year player, Max Strus maybe. Would that contractually have been just enough to pry Mitchell out of there? And if that's the case, I don't know if that's really the kind of deal that Miami wants to make. But you bring up a good question when you're talking about comparing these deals, and I have to it comes down to me how you perceive Hero's value versus Colin Sexton's value, because Colin Sexton getting an extension for 4 years, was it $72 million? So you're getting a young player with some offense potential, limited in size perhaps, but then you look at what Tyler Hero is supposed to get in his theoretic potential, extension, 4 years, maybe north of $100 million, $100 to $125 million, as much as I think it has been reported. Given that, would you say that maybe Colin Sexton is a better value even than Tyler Hero? You're going to get similar production, 20-plus points per game, things of that sort. Another young player that you can build around. I think it questions how Tyler Hero is perceived by teams like Utah and elsewhere.
Maybe. I mean, that's a fair point. Look, Tyler Hero is going to make a lot of money. If you're Utah, maybe you don't want to be rebuilding around a guy like Tyler Hero, not because of his talent, just because, you know, you don't want to be paying somebody $20 to $25 million a year just yet. And Sexton is a good young player. I don't think he's anywhere in the realm of Tyler Hero, but certainly is a guy who can, you know, contribute, score some points, maybe score a bunch more points on a team that doesn't necessarily have that contributor. And then next thing you know, like, you could flip him down the road for other types of assets coming back. So, look, I get that. I definitely get it. I just wonder if the Heat ever even got as far as to offer him in the first place, because the other part of this, too, is I think for Cleveland, this makes sense. I really, really like this trade for the Cavaliers. You're adding Donovan Mitchell to an all-star in Darius Garland, an all-star in Jarrett Allen, a potential superstar in Evan Mobley, and people are really around the league are really, really high on Evan Mobley. Mm. So now you basically got your foursome for the future. Not to mention Isaac Okoro. If he can ever learn to shoot from beyond 6 feet, like, who knows? And so this makes sense for them because they're a young team trying to stay young and trying to create a window for themselves. That's not what the Heat are. The Heat are a team with a window open right now, arguably, or at least hoping that it is, with an aging Jimmy Butler and an aging Kyle Lowry. And yeah, you've got nice young players in Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero, but the window that they're trying to maximize in any sort of superstar trade is the right now window, not the later window as Cleveland is trying to do. And so we've talked about this, David. Like, trade for Donovan Mitchell, you're getting a really great young player with a ton of upside, but I don't think he's the kind of guy, top 20, 25 player in the NBA, very good, very young, lots of potential, not the guy who right now is going to put you over the top over a Milwaukee or Boston or certainly whoever comes out of the Western Conference. Mm. So for Miami to give up the entire future to not necessarily maximize the present, that is, I think, why they, if they never offered as much as what Cleveland offered, probably why they didn't, I would assume. So it was just this.
Well,
is
it's an assumption that they didn't, right?
When you compare Cleveland,
it's an assumption they didn't. Like, it could have just been Danny Ainge saying, "You know what? I don't care what Pat Riley offers. I don't want to engage in a talk with
that
him."
That also could have been it. Yes, absolutely.
I would hate to think that that kind of pettiness would, you know, ruin the potential.
Do you think this reflects poorly on Miami? If they didn't offer it, or if they got so far as to the point where, hey, it was just Danny Ainge didn't want to help Pat Riley, like whatever it was, does it look poorly? Does it look bad that the Heat weren't able to land Donovan Mitchell, despite them being kind of rumored about Donovan Mitchell more than, to your point, Cleveland ever was?
I think it's more about their assessment of that kind of player. Like, you know, physically, there are limitations there. He's somewhat undersized. I don't think that would have been a drastic problem for there. But, I mean, you look at the potential of him pairing alongside Kyle Lowry, and you've got a very undersized backcourt. Lowry, obviously, a very good defender, very stout defender, even at this age. With Mitchell, maybe some more lasting concerns there. I don't know about his fit on this team. Like, I would have thought it would have been a better fit on this team, because I think with Kyle Lowry and his leadership experience, with Jimmy Butler clearly is still the team's best player, with a close personal friend and Bam Adebayo, I think it would have been a nice addition to this group. And I don't think he would have disrupted chemistry. I think he would have bought into what Miami's doing. And I think he certainly would have love the ability to fill in for a mentor like Dwayne Wade and be able to carry on a Heat tradition, et cetera. So I don't know. Maybe the Heat front office just didn't value him that highly, or didn't want to. And as you were kind of hinting at there, they didn't want to give up this much for him at this point in time, knowing that, well, he could potentially become a free agent in just a few years, and the door will be open for Miami when Kyle Lowry's contract is off the books, and maybe you can make a couple other moves here and there to free up space, and then you can get a more mature, perhaps even a better version of Donovan Mitchell down the road.
I mean, maybe. I can't figure out what it is exactly that the Miami Heat want to do. Kevin Durant is available. He's 34 years old, sure, but he's a top five player in the NBA. The kind of player who could put you over the top within this next year. And this window, man, is closing, and it's closing fast. I don't know how much longer it is. I don't know if it's 2 years. I don't know if it's 3 years. I don't know what it is. And you have an opportunity to go get Kevin Durant, and you're not willing to include Bam Adebayo in that deal. Like, not a criticism of the Miami Heat. I'm just pointing out a fact. That was an option for them to do. Right. They did not do it. A young superstar player, potential superstar player, and Donovan Mitchell is available, doesn't necessarily maximize the immediate window, but could keep that window open a little bit longer, perhaps, than what it would be open right now. Perhaps. And you don't make that deal either. And so I don't know what the perfect superstar is, and we could argue whether or not the Miami Heat need another superstar or not. It feels like they feel like they need another superstar because they've been superstar chasing. So which one is it? Do you want the young one or do you want the old one? I know that nobody's perfect. Donovan Mitchell's not perfect. Kevin Durant's not perfect, as we discussed ad nauseum over the last couple months. But I don't know what it is that they're looking for. I don't know if that perfect superstar will ever become available. And so I guess I was curious as to if the Heat did not go so far as to offer the mother load the way that Cleveland did. Mm-hmm. If they didn't match this offer, why not? And again, it's an answer we'll probably never get. We probably will never get that answer because so few people, even in the Miami Heat organization, probably know the exact answer to that. Either way, Donovan Mitchell ends up in Cleveland, going another superstar going from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference, an Eastern Conference that seems absolutely loaded. Where do the Miami Heat stack up now? That's what we're going to talk about next. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you are depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And guess what? There's a new flavor. Ready? Delicious, indulgent cookie dough. Covered in chocolate. That's right. Built has done it again. Let me introduce you to your new favorite. Cookie dough chunk puffs have a light and chewy texture. Real cookie dough chunks. And of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. All the joys of eating cookie dough without the hassle of making it. Plus, it's good for you. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein. So run to built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It's the perfect treat, or you can find a really good hiding place and just hoard them for yourself. Like all Built Bars, the new cookie dough chunk puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. Chocolate covered cookie dough with a light, fluffy texture. It's delicious. And what's great about Built is that all of their bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. So eat something that tastes good and is good for you. You're going to love the new cookie dough chunk puff, whether you need a snack for your workout, a late night treat, or just need to grab a quick bite. Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. Ditch the calories, fat, and sugar. Grab yourself a Built bar. Go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off on your order. Again, use that promo code, a new one for us, LOCKEDON15. Back here with Locked On Heat, discussing all the angles of the Donovan Mitchell deal. We'll talk about what the Heat need to do next in regards to a potential trade. But first, let's take a look, zoom out at the Eastern Conference as a whole, David, because...
It's a bloodbath out there.
It is a bloodbath out there, absolutely. Just like this last weekend was for me. It was rough. But I think if you take a look at the Eastern Conference, I think you have a pretty clear top tier, right? Boston, just in the NBA Finals, and Milwaukee, Giannis, Chris Middleton back and healthy, Drew Holiday. To me, those are the clear top two teams in the East. You could put them in whatever order you want. After that, I think there's another tier with one team, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. I like their offseason, adding PJ Tucker, DeAnthony Melton, Joel Embiid, MVP candidate, James Harden, full year of him, probably back, Tyrese Maxey, young, getting better. Good depth there. To me, that's they're a tier below Milwaukee and Boston, but pretty clearly above the other teams. I think after that, from 4 to 9, it's pretty wide open to me.
It's pretty
honest. And I would put Miami and Brooklyn ahead of the rest of the pack. That also includes I've got Toronto, Chicago, Atlanta, and Cleveland now. I've got Miami in Brooklyn. Just Brooklyn because of the talent. Again, we'll see. Brooklyn could be as far as the top tier, but like let's see it first. Mm-hmm. And then Miami, institutional knowledge, fundamentals. You know they're going to play hard every single night. Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, a bunch of talented players, even though they're probably going to backslide a little bit because of the loss of PJ Tucker and just the rest of the conference getting better. But I do think that this Cleveland move could open the door for them to sneak into that tier with Miami and Brooklyn potentially. I think they're that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the underlining story here is a team like the Heat that was the number one seed last year, that's far from a guarantee. If you look at where they're at from 4 to 9 in the Eastern Conference probably, I mean the play-in tournament is a potential. Like this is a team that it's probably going to take a slide back and a tougher Eastern Conference.
And that's not necessarily, again, a condemnation of the team. It's not saying that the Heat are bad or anything else, or maybe not even worse than they were last year. I just think with the quality of the teams around them. I mean, you look at Boston, very good team. They improved. Atlanta improved to some degree. On and on. Philadelphia, as you mentioned. Even New York improved, although that's debatable to see how they'll put it all together. And you look at Cleveland, I think on paper, they're a better team than the Miami Heat. I would actually rank them above Miami at this point in time, just because they have those four all-star caliber players. They've got their... Right. Sixth man of the year candidate and Kevin Love, who's still a good locker room presence and can still contribute at a high level. They've got enough fine players around those four all-star types and good enough coaching where they can win close to 50 games, which is what I would have projected Miami to be close to winning. Having said all that, I still think that Cleveland is a better team in the regular season, but Miami would be a better team for the playoffs. It's a team that's built for the playoffs. And they'll probably have to sacrifice some winning in between October and April. And I know that's going to be frustrating for a lot of Heat fans, but it's probably the right decision to be more strategic. Again, as we've talked about recently, they're not catching anybody by surprise. All the players on their roster have been on this roster for a year. Nobody's going to just pop up and all of a sudden take over a game like a Max Strus or a Gabe Vincent or even an Omer Yurtseven that wasn't on scouting reports, even as he was starting in the middle of the loss of Bam Adebayo. You know, you didn't have any – no, there's no – I mean, Haywood Highsmith could, in theory, pop this year. But, I mean, that's – I don't think that's what you're counting on moving forward.
He's not – yeah, he's not taking you to the number one
right.
seed.
I don't think he's going to have 15 win game, you know, game win shares or anything like that in his favor. So I still think Miami has everything they need in order to be able to compete at a high level in the playoffs. It's just during the regular season they'll probably stake back. And I'm higher on Brooklyn than you are. I think they still have enough talent there with KD – and Kyrie to be able to win it all.
I think they can. Yeah, no, I think the Nets absolutely can. I'm just like, let me see Kyrie play 60 games first before and Ben Simmons get back on the court before I start putting them in that top tier. Look, I'm with you. I think Milwaukee can win 60 games this year, right? Boston can win 60 games this year. heck, if Joel Embiid has a healthy season, Philadelphia can win 55 to 60 games this year. I think Cleveland can win 50 games this year. That's a lot of high volume win teams in the Eastern Conference, and I didn't even include Brooklyn. Who knows if they pop? So I think it's going to be really tough for the Heat, and it again, it doesn't say anything about what they're going to do in the playoffs. They're just not going to have home court advantage. I would be shocked. And like COVID, this is a team that like COVID helped them last year in a way that this was a team that entered the season fully vaccinated. They weren't dealing with it the same way that Brooklyn was, or even in the same way that Boston was. In that December stretch when everybody was like putting G League teams out, Miami just they went ahead and grabbed the number one seed. And so
yeah, but also like, by fielding a G League team, just a G League team that was better coached than everybody else's.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like this, they were a team just like in the bubble, sort of uniquely suited to handle that. And that doesn't make it a fluke. It doesn't make it whatever. It speaks to the infrastructure of the team. And but they're not going to hopefully have that this time. So. I look at this team as a team that could, and I hate to say this, David, I really do, but this is they're in danger. If they don't make any changes, if they don't improve, whether it's via trade or drastic internal improvement, the play-in tournament is not out of the question, right? Like, this is not a, it sounds crazy, I think, for Heat fans to be like, the Heat in the play-in tournament, no way, but like, you've got to be like a pretty big homer to say that, yeah, that's a team that's clearly 5 to 10 wins better than Brooklyn, Toronto, Chicago, Atlanta, Cleveland. And that's what we're talking about. 4 to 9 is that packed where the difference of getting the 4 seed and having home court in the first round and kind of sinking into the play-in tournament could be 2-3 games. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's that tight.
No, I think that's absolutely fair. I mean, and you don't want to be in that position where your season boils down to just one game because what if Jimmy has an off-shooting
night?
Can happen. What if he doesn't get to the foul line, et cetera? You know, we've seen a lot of this in the past. You don't want to count this team out. I mean, I like Miami's chances, but you never want it to come down to just one game deciding your season and your ability to be able to advance in the playoffs. Because we know what this team can do in the playoffs, whether they're as talented as other teams or not, doesn't really matter. They'll find a way to fight and persevere. But you don't want it to come down to just, you know, a bad officiating game or a call that goes against you or a missed shot in one way or another. You know, it can always boil down just a few plays. That's never the goal there.
Right, and if you get in the play-in tournament too, I mean, you're playing on the road the entire playoffs as well, right? It's more than just, it extends longer than just the play-in tournament. This is a team that I when you look around the Eastern Conference, I think everybody got a whole lot better. And on paper, you can't really argue that the Miami Heat have. You can get the internal improvement, but it's like it seems crazy to me that this team just stood pat as much as they did. Maybe there's a plan. Maybe there's a move that they could still make. It's what we're going to talk about next here on Locked On Heat. LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Reach us on Twitter @LockedOnHeat. On Instagram @LockedOnHeat. The Miami Heat had maybe opportunities to chase stars like Kevin Durant and Donovan Mitchell. While waiting out the Kevin Durant process, waiting out the Donovan Mitchell process, other minor deals got done this offseason. Other teams got a little bit better on the margins. The Miami Heat, a shot away from the NBA Finals, decided that they didn't want to get better on the margins, although it was just the margins that kept them out of the Finals. They were going for the big swing. They didn't hit that home run. They struck out twice. That's where they're at right now. Do they need to make a trade? Is it a trade that, or do they, like, on the margins, just to improve the team, go get a starting power forward, something you do not have on this roster right now? Is that something that they need to go do? Or should they hold on to the limited draft capital and assets that they have and wait for the next superstar to become available?
Well, it's a hard decision, right? Because you want to maintain that flexibility, et cetera. But I don't think you can afford to wait the way you have in the past. I don't think you can also just swing what the expectation is, which is a mid-season trade where you'll be able to acquire a player who you can plug and play immediately and be a seamless fit to help cement your rotation and get you to that next level and become an even stronger contender. You look at the roster, I think they're going to be good. I think they are going to get that internal development. I think we're going to see a bounce back, strong bounce back year from Kyle Lowry. I think Hero can improve, etc. So you'll get some improvement, but that doesn't necessarily mean or translate that you're into 50 wins. you'll be a better team.
Right.
And yet somehow you can still lose those games. I really do believe that that's the case. Like, you can be a fine team and still wind up losing games. We'll have to see how the whole season plays out. But as far as a trade, I don't think you can afford to wait. I don't think you want to be able to maximize this window, however limited it is or whatever you want to call it, whether it's a short-term window for Jimmy or whether it's a longer-term window for Bam and Tyler. Right. Either way, you want to be able to win as much as you can in the short term. And I don't know that there's going to be another superstar that's available. I don't, you know, I know the problem was they didn't have enough collateral to be able to trade for Kevin Durant. In theory, would that have been the right move? Would you have wanted Miami to trade 5 first round picks for Kevin Durant if it would have?
And Bam. And, right. And it, like, no, absolutely not. And look, I'm not even blaming them for not trading for Donovan Mitchell, right? Like, that's a lot to give up. But you just look at the past like couple years, every superstar these guys that are becoming available, like 3 unprotected picks is just the cost of having the conversation. Yeah. Like, you don't even get
Jimmy Butler for Josh Richardson.
Right. And that's just not going to happen again. I can't see it. Like, you can't, or I should say this, you can't bank on that happening again. Like, you just look at Donovan Mitchell, 3 unprotected picks. Rudy Gobert, 3 unprotected picks. DeJounte Murray, 2 unprotected picks and a lightly protected other first round pick. That's not even mentioning all the pick swaps and the other young players that were changing teams in those deals. Like, it's going to take 3 unprotected picks to even go get that guy that you are apparently trying to get. Again, I'm not trying to make too much out of this, but like, this is clearly what the Heat are doing. And we talk about these marginal trades. Do you want to make a little thing to make your team better? This team has an obvious hole on the roster. There is no power forward. And maybe you can tell me that Jimmy Butler could play power forward. He could, and he'll be good at it. But he'd be playing out of position. You do not have a power forward on this roster. I don't mean to make too much of this. I don't mean to make too much of PJ Tucker. Right, I'm not trying to overstate his contributions to last year's team. He was a very good player, but he's not like an all-star player. Right? I'm not saying that you lose PJ Tucker and your window is closed. I am just saying this team has a very obvious hole on the roster that they have decided not to, and that's not an opinion, it is a fact. They don't have a power forward on the team.
Yeah.
And you decide that you don't want to do that so that you could chase these other stars, and then when you're on the phone apparently trying to land one of these stars, you're not willing to go there. Cleveland was willing to go there. Cleveland was willing to go there. You weren't willing to go there. Why? Not a criticism, just a question. Why? And if you weren't willing to go there, like, what's stopping you from going there? And if you're not going to do it, then what's stopping you from using a pick here or 2 picks there or whatever it's going to be to go fill a major need on your team? That's what I don't understand. I'm sure there's some sort of plan here. I think, by the way, the Miami Heat will make a trade by the end of the season. It's probably going to have to be a deadline deal. This is a team that kind of boxed themselves into a corner. Their best trade assets can't get dealt until basically a couple months before the trade deadline. You look at Victor Oladipo, Dwayne Dedman, Caleb Martin. Those are their best, most tradable, chunky contracts to go ahead and make an upgrade that's marginal, like a starting caliber power forward. But with that all, and because they just re-signed, they can't get traded right now. But unfortunately, that means that they're probably going to have to play without a real power forward for a couple of months.
Yeah, and I don't think you can afford to wait that long, though, because exactly as we're talking about, that might cost you 5-6 games. And if that's the case, then all of a sudden you're much closer to that play-in seed. And whatever trade happens in mid-season, it's not going to be for a superstar. It's going to be for another player, a situational-type position player that you can fit in. Maybe it's Jay Crowder. Maybe it's somebody else. Who knows? You'd be able to...
Jay Crowder type deal from like 2019. Right. Exactly.
Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes is going to come in here and immediately ignite his team to, you know, 5 more wins than they were going to get before. So all of a sudden now you're flirting with being out of the playoffs. You can't afford to wait that long. I don't think you can. This is not that team. I know that we've talked about it before. I know you just brought it up now that the contracts that become available increase the number of options you have. I just don't know that they can afford to wait that long. I don't know if they're going to just be able to hold off until February and then all of a sudden, or whenever these contracts can become tradable. December?
Right. December, yeah. And then the deadline is sometime in February.
Yeah,
it
speeds things up.
So what you're saying is basically you have one real tradable deal in Duncan Robinson.
I guess that's it.
You're saying you're basically going to have to move him and at like a first-round pick, 2 first-round picks in order to make an upgrade?
I don't think that there's a player available for Duncan Robinson and two first round picks that would make this team substantially better. Like Harrison Barnes is going to be a substantial improvement, worth that kind of a deal. Not to me. Like, yeah. I still like Duncan. I still like his fit, and two first round picks. Again, that just seems excessive. So something, a smaller deal of some it kind. I don't know what it is. I mean, even Lauri Markkanen, who was traded to Utah, suddenly becomes available. Yeah. I know we'll talk about in the next couple of days some of the big names that might be available, or some of the just names, not even big names, but just names that might be available. And Markkanen is certainly one of them.
And another guy who is already on Utah, Bojan Bogdanovic, like a guy who could play two forward positions, elite level shooter, not a very good defender, but can play both of those spots. I mean, could just fill that spot.
What's the value? What's the trade value for Bogdanovic? You're a lot higher. We had this discussion earlier. What's your value? If you were Pat Riley, what would you offer for Bogdanovic, whether age accepts it or not?
I would offer Duncan Robinson. I would offer Duncan Robinson because I know this guy can play power forward for me. He's older. He's on an expiring contract, but I just don't know what Utah, like Utah wants picks, right? Like why would they swap Bogdanovic for Duncan Robinson? So you're going to have to now attach a first round pick to Duncan Robinson. And now you're trading one of your limited draft assets. Right. And a big chunky salary and a player that you still kind of like in Duncan Robinson for Bojan Bogdanovic. Like it's just, there's not a deal that lines up. I know every Heat fan wants to say, hey, just go trade Jay Crowder. Right. Show me the deal that makes sense. Like not just even from a value standpoint, from literally a contracting matching standpoint, which is a rule in the NBA that you must follow. There are not contracts that the Heat you can use to match Jay Crowder's $10 million salary, not to mention what Phoenix would also want.
I'm glad you brought up...
Right? Like, you might have to attach picks to that kind of deal.
I'm glad you brought up Crowder, because that, to me, is a cautionary tale also. Like, you saw what happened with Crowder. Like, Crowder wanted to stay in Miami, wanted the comfort of the security of a long-term deal that Miami wasn't willing to offer. Why? Because they wanted to be flexible. They wanted to be able to pursue Giannis Antetokounmpo. What happened? They couldn't. Giannis signed a supermax deal in Milwaukee. They won a championship. They're still a contender 2 years later. And what's Miami's solution? To acquire Jay Crowder. Like if they had him on the roster, maybe they wouldn't have they wouldn't have signed PJ Tucker. They wouldn't have lost Tucker to a rival in the Eastern Conference.
They just did the same thing, to your point, with PJ Tucker. And they had this play a whole year with Mo Harkless and Trevor Ariza and that mismatch of non-power forward, power forwards. Yeah. And it kind of feels like we're going in that direction again, aren't we, David? Yeah. Because you lose PJ Tucker because you could have signed him to the long-term deal. Again, I'm not saying that they should have done 3 years, $30 million or whatever it was, but like I'm just telling people what happened here. You let PJ Tucker walk because you want the flexibility to go chase a superstar. You have an opportunity to chase not one but two superstars, and you're not going far enough to get those players, although everything else you say says everything else you do says you're desperate for that superstar. And now you're saying, well, we got all this flexibility, but you're not using it to do anything, right. And now you have no power forward. And now you have no power forward again, and you're going to be forced to try to do another midseason swing till we get a starter, not even a superstar, but even finding a starting player in the middle of the year is really, really difficult.
Nemanja Bjelica, that was the big solution, right?
And now he's playing in Europe. Look, I don't know where this leaves the Miami Heat. I don't want this. I didn't mean for this to be a whole like the sun is falling type of thing with the Miami Heat, but I just question what this team is doing. Not in a way that is critical, just in that I don't know. I just don't know what the plan is anymore. And that to me is an interesting thing. Maybe the plan is patience, okay? And maybe patience does pay off. I still think this is a team that will look different between now and the end of the regular season.
You didn't answer your own question. Should they make a trade now rather than wait till February?
Should they? Yes. What's the deal? You tell me. Same thing. I don't know. Because this is a team that clearly values the limited draft capital that it has, and it's not going to be willing. Like, just to get off of Duncan, everybody's just like, put Duncan Robinson in a trade and flip him for a starting power forward. Like, Duncan Robinson's on a tough contract after last year. Like, it's probably going to cost a pick just to put him into somebody else's cap space, and now you're going to be asking for something else back. Like you might have to put two picks in a trade to trade Duncan Robinson to another team and get something back of value. I don't know. I don't know. Like me, I would like for them to make a trade now. I think it makes a lot of sense. But these were the deals. Like if you weren't going so far as to match Cleveland's offer for Donovan Mitchell, is there a lesser player? Like do you go after a player who costs you fewer picks? And if you do, Like, to your point, does it matter? Mm-hmm. Like, does it really matter? Even if you were to, like, not even Harrison Barnes. I think DeJounte Murray is a much better player than Harrison Barnes with a whole lot more upside. You add him for two unprotected picks and a pick swap and one other protected pick. Let's say you did a smaller kind of deal than the Donovan Mitchell deal because you weren't willing to go as far as the Donovan Mitchell deal. What's, like, put DeJounte Murray on the Miami Heat right now. Who cares? That doesn't make them better than the Milwaukee Bucks. That doesn't make them better than Boston Celtics. Like, you need that superstar to get you over the top, and they just weren't willing to go that far. It sounds like a criticism, but it's I wouldn't have done either of these trades if I were the Heat. I wouldn't have done the Donovan Mitchell trade. I wouldn't have done the Kevin Durant trade. But I thought that the Heat that I grew up with, that's they do that trade, and I think they're right in not making the trade. I just don't know what it is. I'm just asking questions here, David. I don't know what trades they want to make. They're not making any trades, and their team got worse from last year on paper. And
it could be even. It could be even. I'm not sure if it's worse.
Sure. They didn't get better. They spent the entire offseason talking about this superstar and that superstar, and Pat Riley at the end of the season say, give me a superstar. Show me the superstar. Pat Riley, we showed you the superstars. We showed you another one. We showed you two superstars, and you're like, eh. Too rich for my blood. I'm just confused is all. I'm just asking questions. That's all I'm
asking. That seems passive, but you have to trust that Riley has a plan, that the front office has a plan, and that they believe enough in their young players to take that kind of leap, and that maybe they've got a name in mind that is a better fit and that won't cost them as much. And I'm not sure. I mean, we started having this discussion earlier too. Like you start looking around the teams around the league, and you look at the Eastern Conference, and there are, 12 teams with viable playoff aspirations. Maybe not realistic, but outside of that, like, what teams in the Eastern Conference would you clearly say are not a playoff team? Orlando? Detroit?
Orlando. It seems like Indiana's on their way of kind of going down, but yeah, and that might be the end of the list. Right. Yeah.
So,
and Orlando would tell you that they hope to make the playoffs
absolutely.
Too.
But yeah, that's unrealistic, but yes.
But they're trying to get better. Yeah.
Right. In the West, same thing. Like, there's a lot of parity. There's a lot of good teams that just won't be able to make the playoffs, and I don't know that they're going to be looking to blow things up anytime soon. Or even these younger teams are the ones that aren't going to be making the playoffs. Like, I mean, Miles Turner is just not going to be given away for cheap. Orlando's not trading away anybody on their roster because they're happy with what they have. Like, Terrence Ross might be the most tradable name in that team, and I just don't see that that's going to be realistic either.
Right.
Matter. There's not a lot of teams willing to give up even a serviceable rotation player, so you might not have a deal available to you at this point in time, but you've got to do what you can.
Maybe that's what it is. It's a tough time, right, as we're sort of getting into training camp to go ahead and trade for a starter. Like, when Philly was making deals for a guy like DeAnthony Melton on draft night, when all these things were happening, those were your opportunities. Even, David, like, we're talking about trades. What about, like, they just sat out free agency. Like, all these guys were out there as free agents. It wouldn't have cost them a thing except for money, and that's it. And yet, they didn't want to get into the luxury tax. They wanted to maintain that flexibility so that they didn't want to rub up against the hard tax limit in case they had to do a sign and trade. And these crazy blockbuster deals are out there that they were setting themselves up to do, and then they didn't do them. So I wouldn't have done them. Again, I wouldn't have done them. I just don't know what the Heat are trying to do. I don't know what they're looking for. It feels like they're looking for this perfect thing that toes the line between, not giving up everything but getting this great player. It looks like they're trying to do Jimmy Butler 2.0, where you just trade a solid role player and a couple lame picks, and boom, you've got a transformational superstar. And like, that's the exception, not the rule. The rule is three unprotected picks gets you in the door, and then what are you offering, right? It gets you in the conversation, and then what do you do? What else do you put in that package to actually get the superstar player? And they just haven't been willing to go that far, so I don't know. I don't know what the plan is all I'm saying. Look, we're going to be covering this Donovan Mitchell trade and the fallout of all of this and everything else that's going on with the Miami Heat. Media day and training camp are around the corner at the end of this month. We will have all of that for you and more. In the meantime, this has been our show of Locked on Heat, your daily podcast on the Miami Heat and your first listen every day. Remember to subscribe to new episodes on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. And now, for your second listen, go check out the Ultimate Pro Football Preview 2022. It's an 8-episode extravaganza to get you ready for the NFL season. The local team experts of every Locked on podcast team on the Locked On Podcast Network, plus a betting angle from Lee Sterling of Locked On Bets, all combining into one ultimate pro football NFL preview. Search for the Ultimate Pro Preview 2022 on your Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.